Chapter 2, Ancient Greece and Rome, 1900 BC to AD 500. Key events. As you read, look for the key events in the history of Greece and Rome. Greek philosophers established the foundations of Western philosophy. The Peloponnesian War weakened Athens and Sparta. Rome's republican government was eventually replaced by the rule of an emperor. Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire. The impact today. The events that occurred during this time period still impact our lives today. Much of Western culture was influenced by the artistic ideals of classical Greece. Current democratic systems of government are based on ideas originally developed by the Greeks. Roman achievements in law, government, language, and engineering influenced Western civilization. Section 1. Ancient Greece. Voices from the Past. Classical Greece is the name given to the period of Greek history from around 500 BC to the conquest of Greece by the Macedonian king Philip II in 338 BC. This period was marked not only by a brilliant culture, but also by a disastrous war among the Greeks, the Peloponnesian War, described here by the Greek historian Thucydides. The Peloponnesian War not only lasted for a long time, but throughout its course brought with it unprecedented suffering for Greece. Never before had so many cities been captured and then devastated, whether by foreign armies or by the Greek powers themselves. Never had there been so many exiles, never such loss of life, both in the actual warfare and in internal revolutions. The History of the Peloponnesian War, Thucydides, R. Warner Translator, 1954. For all their accomplishments, the Greeks were unable to rise above the divisions and rivalries that caused them to fight one another and undermine their own civilization. Early Greek Civilization. Geography played an important role in the development of Greek civilization. Compared with Mesopotamia and Egypt, Greece occupies a small area. It is a mountainous peninsula about the size of the state of Louisiana. Much of Greece consists of small plains and river valleys surrounded by high mountain ranges. The mountains isolated Greeks from one another, causing different Greek communities to develop their own ways of life. The sea also influenced the evolution of Greek society. Greece has a long sea coast dotted by bays and inlets that provided many harbors. The Greeks lived on a number of islands to the west, south, and east of the Greek mainland. It was no accident that the Greeks became seafarers. The first Greek state, Mycenae. Mycenae was a fortified site in Greece that was first discovered by the German archaeologist Heinrich Schliemann. Mycenae was one of a number of centers in an early Greek civilization that flourished between 1600 and 1100 BC. The Mycenaean Greeks were part of the Indo-European family of peoples who spread into southern and western Europe, India, and Iran. One of these groups entered Greece from the north around 1900 BC. Over a period of time, this group managed to gain control of the Greek mainland and develop a civilization. Mycenaean civilization, which reached its high point between 1400 and 1200 BC, was made up of powerful monarchies. Each resided in a fortified palace center. Like Mycenae, these centers were built on hills and surrounded by gigantic stone walls. Archaeological evidence indicates that the Mycenaean monarchies developed an extensive commercial network. Some historians believe that the Mycenaeans also spread outward militarily, conquering Crete and making it part of the Mycenaean world. The story of the most famous of all their supposed military adventures, the sacking of the city of Troy, is told in the Iliad, written by the great Greek poet Homer. The Dark Age and Homer. When Mycenaean civilization collapsed around 1100 BC, Greece entered a difficult period in which the population declined and food production dropped. Historians call the period from approximately 1100 to 750 BC the Dark Age, because few records of what happened exist. At the same time, the basis for a new Greece was forming. Near the very end of the Dark Age, the work of Homer appeared. The Iliad and the Odyssey were the first great epic poems of early Greece. An epic poem is a long poem that tells the deeds of a great hero. The Iliad and the Odyssey were based on stories that had been passed down from generation to generation. Specifically, Homer used stories of the Trojan War to compose his epic poems. The war is caused by Paris, a prince of Troy. By kidnapping Helen, the wife of the king of the Greek state of Sparta, Paris outrages all the Greeks. Under the leadership of the Spartan king's brother, King Agamemnon of Mycenae, the Greeks attack Troy and capture it 10 years later. The Odyssey recounts the journeys of one of the Greek heroes, Odysseus, after the fall of Troy and his ultimate return to his wife. The Odyssey has long been considered Homer's other masterpiece. Homer did not so much record history, he created it. The Greeks looked on the Iliad and the Odyssey as true history and as the works of one poet, Homer. These masterpieces gave the Greeks an ideal past with a cast of heroes. The epics came to be used as basic texts for the education of generations of Greek males. Homer gave to later generations of Greek males a model of heroism and honor. The Iliad taught students to be proud of their Greek heritage and their heroic ancestors. Reading check. Summarizing. Why is Homer thought to have created, rather than to have recorded, Greek history? The polis, center of Greek life. By 750 BC, the city-state, or what the Greeks called a polis, became the central focus of Greek life. Our word politics is derived from the Greek word polis. In a physical sense, the polis was a town, a city, or even a village, along with its surrounding countryside. The town, city, or village served as the central point where people could meet for political, social, and religious activities. The main gathering place in the polis was usually a hill. At the top of the hill was a fortified area called an acropolis. The Acropolis served as a place of refuge during an attack and sometimes came to be a religious center on which temples and public buildings were built. Below the Acropolis was an agora, an open area that served both as a place where people could assemble and as a market. City-states varied greatly in size, from a few square miles to a few hundred square miles. They also varied in population. Athens had a population of more than 300,000 by the 5th century B.C., but most city-states were much smaller, consisting of only a few hundred to several thousand people. The polis was, above all, a community of people who shared a common identity and common goals. As a community, the polis consisted of citizens with political rights, adult males, citizens with no political rights, women and children, and non-citizens, slaves and resident aliens. Citizens of a polis had rights, but these rights were coupled with responsibilities. The Greek philosopher Aristotle argued that a citizen did not belong just to himself or herself. We must rather regard every citizen as belonging to the state. Greek states had different forms of government. In some Greek city-states, there emerged democracy, which is government by the people, or rule of the many. Other city-states remained committed to government by an oligarchy, rule by the few. The differences in how Greek city-states were governed is especially evident in the two most famous and most powerful Greek city-states, Sparta and Athens. Reading check. Identifying. Who had political rights in a Greek polis? Who did not? Sparta. Between 800 and 600 BC, the lives of Spartans were rigidly organized and tightly controlled. Thus, our word, Spartan, meaning highly self-disciplined. Males spent their childhood learning military discipline. Then they enrolled in the army for regular military service at the age of 20. Although allowed to marry, they continued to live in the military barracks until age 30. At 30, Spartan males were allowed to vote in the assembly and live at home, but they stayed in the army until the age of 60. While their husbands lived in the barracks, Spartan women lived at home. Because of this separation, Spartan women had greater freedom of movement and greater power in the household than was common elsewhere in Greece. Many Spartan women upheld the strict Spartan values, expecting their husbands and sons to be brave in war. The story is told of a Spartan woman who, as she was handing her son his shield, told him to come back carrying his shield or being carried on it. The Spartan government was an oligarchy headed by two kings who led the Spartan army on its campaigns. A group of five men known as the ephors were elected each year and were responsible for the education of youth and the conduct of all citizens. A council of elders, composed of the two kings and 28 citizens over the age of 60, decided on the issues that would be presented to an assembly made up of male citizens. This assembly did not debate, it only voted on the issues. To make their new military state secure, the Spartans turned their backs on the outside world. Foreigners, who might have brought in new ideas, were discouraged from visiting. Except for military reasons, Spartans were not allowed to travel abroad, where they might encounter ideas dangerous to the stability of the state. Likewise, Spartan citizens were discouraged from studying philosophy, literature, or the arts, subjects that might encourage new thoughts. The art of war was the Spartan ideal. Reading check. Summarizing. How did the restrictions placed on Spartan males affect their lives? Athens. By 700 BC, Athens had become a unified polis on the peninsula of Attica. Early Athens was ruled by a king. By the 7th century BC, however, Athens had become an oligarchy under the control of its aristocrats. These aristocrats owned the best land and controlled political life. There was an assembly of all the citizens, but it had few powers. Near the end of the 7th century BC, Athens faced political turmoil because of serious economic problems. Many Athenian farmers were sold into slavery when they were unable to repay their debts to their aristocratic neighbors. Over and over, there were cries to cancel the debts and give land to the poor. Athens seemed on the verge of civil war. The ruling Athenian aristocrats reacted to this crisis in 594 BC by giving full power to Solon, a reform-minded aristocrat. Solon canceled all land debts and freed people who had fallen into slavery for debts. He refused, however, to take land from the rich and give it to the poor. Solon's reforms, though popular, did not solve the problems of Athens. Aristocrats were still powerful, and poor peasants could not obtain land. It was not until 508 BC that Clisthenes, another reformer, gained the upper hand. Clisthenes created a new council of 500 that supervised foreign affairs, oversaw the treasury, and proposed the laws that would be voted on by the assembly. The Athenian assembly, composed of male citizens, was given final authority to pass laws after free and open debate. Because the assembly of citizens now had the central role in the Athenian political system, the reforms of Clisthenes created the foundations for Athenian democracy. Reading check. Explaining. How did Clisthenes create the foundation for democracy in Athens? Classical Greece. Turning point. Pericles expanded the involvement of Athenians in their democracy. By creating a direct democracy, he enabled every male citizen to play a role in government. Classical Greece is the name given to the period of Greek history from around 500 BC to the conquest of Greece in 338 BC. This period was marked by two wars. In the first one, fought between 499 BC and 479 BC, the Greeks worked together to defeat two invasions by the Persians. After the defeat of the Persians, Athens took over the leadership of the Greek world. Under Pericles, who was a dominant figure in Athenian politics between 461 and 429 BC, Athens expanded its new empire abroad. At the same time, democracy flourished at home. This period of Athenian and Greek history, which historians have called the Age of Pericles, saw the height of Athenian power and brilliance. In the Age of Pericles, the Athenians became deeply attached to their democratic system, which was a direct democracy. In a direct democracy, the people participate directly in government decision-making through mass meetings. In Athens, every male who was a citizen participated in the governing assembly and voted on all major issues. The growth of the Athenian Empire, however, left the Greek world divided into two major camps, the Athenian Empire and Sparta. Athens and Sparta had built two very different kinds of societies, and neither state was able to tolerate the other system. Sparta and its allies feared the growing Athenian Empire, and a series of disputes finally led to the outbreak of the Great Peloponnesian War in 431 BC. This disastrous civil war lasted until 405 BC, when the Athenian fleet was destroyed at Aegospotami. Within the next year, Athens surrendered. Its walls were torn down, the navy disbanded, and the Athenian Empire destroyed. The Great Peloponnesian War weakened the major Greek states and ruined any possibility of cooperation among them. During the next 70 years, Sparta, Athens, and Thebes, a new Greek power, struggled to dominate Greek affairs. In continuing their petty wars, the Greeks ignored the growing power of Macedonia to their north. Reading check. Explaining. How did the Great Peloponnesian War weaken the Greek states? The culture of classical Greece. Classical Greece, especially Athens under the rule of Pericles, witnessed a period of remarkable intellectual and cultural growth. The developments of this period became the main source of Western culture. The classical ideals of Greek art. The arts of the Western world have been largely dominated by the standards set by the Greeks of the classical period. Classical Greek art was concerned with expressing eternal ideals, reason, moderation, balance, and harmony in all things. The subject matter of this art was the human being, presented as an object of great beauty. The classic style was meant to civilize the emotions. In architecture, the most important form was the temple dedicated to a god or goddess. At the center of Greek temples were walled rooms that housed both the statues of deities and treasuries in which gifts to the gods and goddesses were safeguarded. These central rooms were surrounded by a screen of columns that made Greek temples open structures rather than closed ones. Some of the finest examples of Greek classical architecture were built in Athens in the 5th century BC. The most famous building, regarded as the greatest example of the classical Greek temple, was the Parthenon. It was built between 447 and 432 BC. Dedicated to Athena, the patron goddess of Athens, and to the glory of Athens itself, the Parthenon was an expression of Athenian pride in their city-state. The Parthenon shows the principles of classical architecture, the search for calmness, clarity, and freedom from unnecessary detail. Greek sculpture also developed a classical style. Lifelike statues of the male nude, the favorite subject of Greek sculptors, showed relaxed attitudes. Their faces were self-assured, their bodies flexible and smooth-muscled. Greek sculptors sought to achieve a standard of ideal beauty rather than realism. Greek drama. Drama, as we know it in Western culture, was created by the Greeks. Plays were presented in outdoor theaters as part of religious festivals. The first Greek dramas were tragedies, which were presented in a trilogy, a set of three plays, built around a common theme. The only complete trilogy we possess today, called the Oresteia, was composed by Aeschylus. This set of three plays relates the fate of Agamemnon, a hero in the Trojan War, and his family after his return from the war. Greek tragedies dealt with universal themes still relevant today. They examined such problems as the nature of good and evil, the rights of the individual, the nature of divine forces, and the nature of human beings. In the world of the Greek tragedies, striving to do the best thing may not always lead to success, but the attempt is a worthy endeavor. Greek pride in accomplishment and independence was real. As the chorus chanted in Sophocles' Antigone, "Is there anything more wonderful on earth, our marvelous planet, than the miracle of man?" Greek philosophy. The term philosophy comes from a Greek word that means love of wisdom. Early Greek philosophers were concerned with the development of critical or rational thought about the nature of the universe. Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle remain to this day three of the greatest philosophers of the Western world. Socrates was a stonemason, but his true love was philosophy. He taught many pupils, but he accepted no pay. He believed that the goal of education was only to improve the individual. Socrates used a teaching method that is still known by his name. The Socratic method of teaching uses a question and answer format to lead pupils to see things for themselves by using their own reason. Socrates believed that all real knowledge is already present within each person. Only critical examination is needed to call it forth. This was the real task of philosophy because, as Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. This belief in the individual's ability to reason was an important contribution of the Greeks. One of Socrates' students was Plato, considered by many to be the greatest philosopher of Western civilization. Unlike his master Socrates, who did not write down his thoughts, Plato wrote a great deal. He was particularly fascinated with the question of how we know what is real. Plato's ideas about government were explained in a work entitled The Republic. Based on his experiences in Athens, Plato had come to distrust the workings of democracy. To him, individuals could not achieve a good life unless they lived in a just or fair and rational state. Plato's search for the just state led him to construct an ideal state in which people were divided into three basic groups. At the top was an upper class of philosopher kings. The second group in Plato's ideal state were warriors who protected society. The third group contained all the rest, the masses, people driven not by wisdom or courage, but by desire. They would be the producers of society, artisans, tradespeople, and farmers. Contrary to Greek custom, Plato also believed that men and women should have the same education and equal access to all positions. Plato established a school in Athens known as the Academy. One of his pupils, who studied at the Academy for 20 years, was Aristotle. Aristotle's interests lay in analyzing and classifying things based on observation and investigation. He wrote about many subjects, including ethics, logic, politics, poetry, astronomy, geology, biology, and physics. Like Plato, Aristotle wanted an effective form of government that would rationally direct human affairs. Unlike Plato, he did not seek an ideal state, but tried to find the best form of government by analyzing existing governments. For his Politics, Aristotle looked at the constitutions of 158 states and found three good forms of government: monarchy, aristocracy, and constitutional government. He favored constitutional government as the best form for most people. Reading check. Summarizing. What ideals were expressed in classical Greek art, architecture, and drama? Alexander the Great. Turning point. As a result of Alexander's conquests, Greek language, art, architecture, and literature spread throughout Southwest Asia. The Greeks viewed their northern neighbors, the Macedonians, as barbarians, but in 359 BC, Philip II came to the Macedonian throne. A great admirer of Greek culture, he longed to unite all of Greece under Macedonia. He finally did so in 338 BC at the Battle of Chaeronea, near Thebes. The Macedonian army crushed the Greeks. Philip insisted that the Greek states form a league and then cooperate with him in a war against Persia. Before Philip could undertake his invasion of Asia, however, he was assassinated, leaving the task to his son, Alexander. Alexander the Great was only 20 when he became king of Macedonia. After his father's death, Alexander moved quickly to fulfill his father's dream of invading the Persian Empire. In the spring of 334 BC, Alexander entered Asia Minor with an army of some 37,000 men, both Macedonians and Greeks. By 331 BC, Alexander had taken possession of the Persian Empire. However, he was not content. Over the next 3 years, Alexander moved east and northeast as far as modern-day Pakistan. By the summer of 327 BC, he had entered India, where he experienced a number of difficult campaigns. Weary of fighting year after year, his soldiers refused to go farther. Alexander returned to Babylon, where he planned more campaigns. However, in June 323 BC, exhausted from wounds, fever, and too much alcohol, he died at the age of 32. Reading check. Identifying. What changes in the Greek states resulted from the Greeks' defeat at the Battle of Chaeronea? The Hellenistic Era. Alexander created a new age, the Hellenistic Era. The word Hellenistic is derived from a Greek word meaning to imitate Greeks. It is an appropriate way, then, to describe an age that saw the expansion of the Greek language and ideas to the non-Greek world of Southwest Asia and beyond. The Hellenistic Kingdoms. The United Empire that Alexander created by his conquests fell apart soon after his death, as the most important Macedonian generals engaged in a struggle for power. By 300 BC, any hope of unity was dead. Eventually, four Hellenistic kingdoms emerged as the successors to Alexander: Macedonia, Syria in the east, the Kingdom of Pergamum in western Asia Minor, and Egypt. All were eventually conquered by the Romans. Hellenistic rulers encouraged a massive spread of Greek colonists to Southwest Asia. Greeks and Macedonians provided not only new recruits for the army, but also a pool of civilian administrators and workers. Architects, engineers, dramatists, and actors were all in demand in the new Greek cities. The Greek cities of the Hellenistic era became the chief agents in the spread of Greek culture in Southwest Asia, as far, in fact, as modern-day Afghanistan and India. Hellenistic culture. The Hellenistic era was a period of considerable cultural accomplishment in many areas. Certain centers, especially the great Hellenistic city of Alexandria, stood out. Alexandria became home to poets, writers, philosophers, and scientists, scholars of all kinds. The founding of new cities and the rebuilding of old ones presented many opportunities for Greek architects and sculptors. Both Hellenistic kings and rich citizens patronized sculptors. Thousands of statues were erected in towns and cities all over the Hellenistic world. Hellenistic sculptors moved away from the idealism of earlier classicism to a more emotional and realistic art. This is especially evident in the numerous statues of women and children. Reading check. Identifying. Which four kingdoms emerged following Alexander's death? Critical thinking, skill builder, making comparisons. Why learn this skill? When making comparisons, you identify the similarities and differences among two or more ideas, objects, or events. Learning the skill. Follow these steps to make comparisons. Find two subjects that can be compared. They should be similar enough to have characteristics that are common to both. For example, it would be more appropriate to compare a Greek statue to an Egyptian statue than to an abstract modern painting. Determine which features the subjects have in common that are suitable for comparison. Look for similarities and differences within these areas. If possible, find information that explains the similarities and differences. Practicing the skill. The following excerpts from the text discuss Spartan and Athenian models for raising children. Read both excerpts, then answer the questions that follow. Passage A. In Sparta, boys were trained to be soldiers. State officials examined all children at birth and decided whether or not they were fit to live. Those who were judged unfit were left in the open on a mountainside to die. Boys judged fit were put under control of the state at age 7. They lived in military-style barracks and were subjected to harsh discipline to make them tough. Their education stressed military training and obedience to authority. Passage B. Athenian children were nurtured by their mothers until the age of 7, when boys of the upper class were turned over to a male servant known as a pedagogue. The pedagogue accompanied the child to school and was responsible for teaching his charge good manners. He could punish the child with a birch rod to impose discipline. The purpose of an education for upper-class Athenian boys was to create a well-rounded person. A boy had 3 teachers. One taught reading, writing, and arithmetic, a second taught physical education, and a third taught music. Education ended at 18, when an Athenian male formally became a citizen. 1. Make a chart with one column labeled Sparta and one labeled Athens. List the similarities in how the two states raise children, then list the differences. 2. How did the similarities and differences in raising children suit the needs of each city-state? National Geographic, More Than Myth to the Iliad. In Homer's epic poem, The Iliad, the rich and powerful city-state of Mycenae headed a united Greek attack against windy Ilion, the wealthy city of Troy, to avenge the kidnapping of lovely-haired Helen, wife of Sparta's king Menelaus. For centuries, the fabled treasures of these legendary cities were thought to exist, like the Trojan War itself, in imagination only. But modern archaeology suggests there may be more than myth to Homer's classic tale. Greeks in antiquity considered the Iliad to be a historical account of their past. Alexander the Great, for example, traced his mother's family back to the hero Achilles. We know today that the poem is not a true story of war in Greece's late Bronze Age, about 1600 to 1100 BC. For one thing, the Iliad was not written during this period. It is the result of more than 500 years of oral tradition handed down by generations of professional poets. Credit for the final masterpiece went to someone the Greeks called Divine Homer, but they knew nothing more about this person than his supposed name, and neither do we. Still, myths often spring from a kernel of historical truth. And in the late 19th century, the Trojan War's mythic rival cities entered the real world of history. Between 1870 and 1890, German businessman and amateur archaeologist Heinrich Schliemann carried out archaeological digs that put Troy and Mycenae on the map. Since then, archaeologists and scholars have uncovered numerous details suggesting that Homer's Iliad records many aspects of the Greek Bronze Age, known to historians as the Mycenaean Age, for the city that dominated the period. The giant walls of Mycenae and its fabulous treasure, for example, and the geography around Troy itself in northwestern Turkey, all support descriptions you can find in the poem's stirring rhythms. Descendants of Greek-speaking peoples who appeared on the Greek mainland around 1900 BC, the Mycenaeans eventually developed societies that revolved around a central palace. In addition to Mycenae itself, Schliemann and later archaeologists have discovered major Mycenaean centers whose names appear in the Iliad: Sacred Pylos, Tyrans of the Huge Walls, and Thirsty Argos, to list only a few of them. Researchers have also discovered hundreds of settlements and tombs, all with a shared culture. The historical Mycenae dominated the plain of Argos, a wealthy region that controlled much of the trade across the Aegean Sea. The city's massive walls enclosed a large administrative complex of royal courts, houses, sanctuaries, and storerooms. Its famous grave circle, unearthed by Schliemann in 1876, revealed rich treasures, suggesting that as early as the 16th century BC, the Mycenaean ruling class possessed a treasure trove of silver, gold, and ivory. From archaeological digs at both Mycenae and Troy came signs that Homer's Iliad told of real things in the ancient world. Among the items found at Mycenae, for example, was a small gold ring. Carved on its face is a miniature battle scene, showing a man protecting his entire body behind a huge shield, the kind that Homer describes the Greek hero Ajax holding in front of him like a wall. The Iliad's heroes were known across the sea in Asia as well. Two mart found in Turkey and dating from the 4th century BC depicts a scene from the Trojan siege. Troy's location at the mouth of the Dardanelles, the strait that Homer called the Hellespont, gave it command of the water route into Central Asia. From this vantage point, the historical Trojans traded skillfully throughout Central Asia. What remains of Troy's wall still overlooks a plain crossed by willow-lined rivers mentioned in the Iliad. Heinrich Schliemann's excavation of Troy was crude and impatient. He sank trenches straight to bedrock, believing Homer's windy Ilion would lie at the bottom, thus destroying several layers of history. Today, an international team of archaeologists, directed by Manfred Kormann of Germany's Tübingen University, is re-excavating the entire site. 9 levels ranging from 3000 BC to the Roman city of New Ilium in the early 6th century AD. The 6th and 7th levels straddle the years 1250 to 1150 BC, the era of Homer's War. Whether or not the Greeks actually launched an invasion or entered Troy by means of the famous Trojan horse ruse, evidence shows that the two peoples were in trading contact. Mycenaean pottery found at Troy dates back to 1500 BC. Some 1,300 feet or 396 meters beyond the citadel, first uncovered by Schliemann, Korfman's team of archaeologists has made a most exciting find. They uncovered an extensive trench, 8 feet or 2.4 meters deep and 10 feet or 3 meters wide, encircling an entire lower town of wooden houses. The reconfigured city, which increases the known area of the 6th level of Troy by as much as 50 acres, or 20.25 hectare, is almost 10 times as large as the citadel and held a population of at least 6,000. This finding makes Troy an opponent more equal to the mighty Mycenae than Schliemann's hilltop fortress. Farther afield, in a nearby sand cove, lies evidence to support speculation that the Trojans took advantage of their commanding position at this crossroads of trade between Europe and Asia. Because of prevailing northeasterly winds, shallow-keeled Bronze Age merchant ships would have been forced to wait at Troy for a favorable breeze before proceeding north of the Dardanelles to the Black Sea. Korfman's team has located burials in the cove that reflect different cultural influences, suggesting that the crews of stranded vessels may have died while waiting for the wind to change. Korfman says later texts confirm that occupants of the region exacted tolls from incoming vessels. If Troy grew rich with this practice, it would have made bitter enemies of merchants like the Mycenaeans. Indeed, some historians speculate that conflict over trade routes rather than Helen's legendary beauty may have sparked the Trojan War. As Korfman sees it, it is possible that Troy experienced several commercial skirmishes, if not one Trojan War.